What is going on? Kind of weird to be excited. Three and Out podcast, John Middlecoff. So probably be a little different show today with a Corona theme and just how it relates to football. These are weird times. You know, I don't know exactly what to say, or, you know, typically I would have thought this would be kind of heading into free agency, being excited for everything, but you know, these last really 3 or 4 days since I did the first show of the week, recorded on Monday, have changed a lot. I attempted to go to a NBA game on Wednesday night. I had tickets. I mean, one of the reasons was I just had bought the tickets to see Zion Williamson to play the Kings. My mom lives on the way from where I live, so I went home, kind of made a day of it. And right before the game got canceled. And I was there. I was walking into the arena when the PA announcer, about 5 minutes before tip-off, announced that it was over. Now, you could argue I probably shouldn't have been there in the first place, but you know, I spent $220 on tickets. And I'm not at the point where I'm just throwing away money. And maybe I was not affected or afraid to go in, but I was going to go watch them play. And there were 20,000 people there. I mean, the place was going to be packed, but it got canceled. And then really the next 24 hours to where I'm recording now in the afternoon on Thursday, basically everything's been canceled. Basketball's been suspended. The March Madness and the tournament's canceled. Basically all spring sports and college sports canceled. Major League Baseball indefinitely suspended. And there's a lot of unknown right now. And I'm glad I waited to record this till the afternoon, because I guess what I'll lead the show with, in the Middlecoff mailbag, you can shoot me DMs, but I, you know, as we lead into this, I think we're going to get into free agency here. I think it's going to be delayed. Florio tweeted out that I've been unsure with how this voting process works. They must have to like send in ballots, because if it was digital, we would know whether this thing passed or not, the CBA that is. And from all reports, it feels like it's going to pass, but I can't pretend to know if it's going to pass or not. Let's just assume that we'll have a result come Sunday night, whether the NFL has agreed, the players have agreed to a new CBA with the owners, or they've rejected it. And there were some people, I think a player today for the Saints, Moorhead, tweeted out, you know, this is called uncertainty. This is economic uncertainty. And I feel for everyone right now all over this country who does not just have unlimited money in their bank. You know what I mean. Millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars. Who lives paycheck to paycheck. Who's the majority of America. The majority of America does not have $10,000 in savings. And if this has, whatever you want to believe about Corona, I don't know. It doesn't feel like anyone quite knows. It's just pretty clear it's having serious ramifications on the way we operate worldwide, domestically, as a society. It's going to have huge, huge economic ramifications as things get canceled, as work's not allowed to get done. That's what I know. And a lot of the way our country operates is economically. We're dependent on the economy rolling. I mean, that's our people are. And whether that's just the way we live. And I think football, once they find this out, the right thing to do is to delay free agency a couple weeks. To me, I would just move back. What I would do is just move back free agency. You know, I would write it in pencil, not pen. Just we're not going to have it start next week. We're going to tentatively push it back 2 weeks and kind of go from there. And same with the draft. Everything's just going to get pushed back. And luckily, time's on our side. We're not in season. We've seen the owners don't care about OTAs or anything. It's only the coaches do. Hell, the players would cancel those in a heartbeat. So you got time to work with. You can be nimble. You can pivot easily. And I think the one thing that I read, Florio wrote something on it, and it makes sense, is that Tom Brady signs with the Titans 2 years, $50 million. That breaks on Tuesday, Wednesday. Does that make sense? I mean, listen, I'm in the business of talking about football. Specifically, the NFL is the cash cow. It literally pays my mortgage. is that the right thing to do next week if business are shut down all over America and all the other leagues are shut down? Or is it smart just to maybe take a breath? Because I do think there's an element optically to, you know, it won't look great. Now, that doesn't mean you can really take advantage. There is no competition. I freaking love March Madness. I'm a gambler. I gamble on March Madness. It's canceled. That sucks. There's no way around it. I get it. And I think ultimately you had to cancel it, but that sucks. I would imagine a lot of you listening, I love Thursday and Friday of the tournament. Filling out brackets, rooting for teams and players we don't know. It's as cool of an event as we have in this country, in all of sports. I can't get enough of it. And I think the NFL could look at it like, God, we don't even have that to compete with. We can dominate. The NBA's gone for minimum 30 days. We can really kind of own the headlines. Because think about television. ESPN, Fox, CBS, all their inventory is games. Just in general, whether it's NBA, NHL, golf really is the only sport going. Thank God I got a little money right now on Brooks to win the Players. We'll see if he can come through. He's minus two. He just finished. But all these other, there's going to be nothing on. And I think you could easily justify it. And football gets a lot of heat for being, oh, they're the greedy league. They're the greedy league. Well, I to me, this is an easy one. This is what I would call a BP fastball. Just move it back a couple weeks. Every human, it's not just, oh, we're inconvenient. We're all inconvenienced right now. At any moment, some people we're all in business with, if this gets really ugly, could go under, and we all could be in trouble. You know, in whatever industry we're in. Who knows? This is uncharted territory. I've only been a professional adult, I feel like 5 or 6 years, you know, kind of as I turn to my 30s. Kind of feel it now. Like, I understand, like, when I was young and things, you know, wars would happen or recession would happen, and you feel it, you see the stress on your parents, and you can't even quite comprehend it. You kind of understand it as you get older. It's kind of sobering. You're like, God. You feel, you wish you could go back to like your 13-year-old self and like have a serious conversation with your parents. But it's not the way the world works. And I think the NFL, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I would imagine they push it back. They're clearly having the conversation. I think that would be the right move. And trust me, you guys have been listening. I'm not Mr. Overreact on stuff. But I don't think we can deny the impact this is now having on everything. And being at the Kings game, or the game didn't happen, but the reason it stopped, for those of you that don't follow basketball, I'm sure you've seen the headline, Rudy Gobert, the center for the Jazz, who had it. Well, one of the referees in that Utah game, who had worked a Utah game earlier in the week, the players on the Pelicans figured out, or it just got out, that that guy had been around Rudy. So all the players started being like, I'm not playing with this guy or around this guy. And then you realize basketball, which is different in some other sports, everyone touches the basketball. And then really just that game got canceled and the whole season got suspended. And then baseball followed suit, NCAA followed suit. The thing with the NFL is there's not, you know, like Florio tweeted this morning, the silence from the NFL is deafening. Well, Mike, the season is not going on. Hell, the free agency is next week, but it's not like an event. You can just do it from your office. So it's the NFL was not up against the wall in terms of a time crunch. They had time was on their side. But I think as they take a deep breath and time gets closer to where they have to make a decision, this feels too easy for me. And, you know, at least where I'm sitting. And I don't know, listen, all the logistics of the league, they're pretty dependent on ESPN, NFL Network, people like me, Coward, whoever. Like, we help the whole thing go, too. And who knows if some of these shows are going to be able to happen. Can you get people in some of these networks? I don't know. It's just, I think it's just easy to take a step back, take a deep breath. You don't even need to put a specific date on it. We're going to open up free agency on this date. Just listen. We're going to push it back at minimum 2 weeks and reassess. Kind of like, when Steph Curry injures his ankle, the Warriors put out a tweet that say, Steph Curry has hurt his ankle. He will be reassessed in 2 weeks, and we will have new information. Just do something like that. Because unlike with basketball, there is The season's going on. The playoffs aren't that far away. The time isn't necessarily on your side, though they have some months to work with. Baseball, the season hasn't even started, but they couldn't go, well, can we afford to push it back till the end of July and start and have play a 3 month? Like, the NFL, the season is so long, so far away that you got a little wiggle room. If worst case scenario, you can't have OTAs, we'll live. We'll live. Would that be ideal? No. Can you get by with that? Yes. If free agency has to start June 1st and the draft is July 1st, you know, shit happens. You don't, it's the crazy part about this world. No one knew Corona or COVID-19 or whatever you're calling it was going to happen. Hell, we're a couple weeks into this and I feel like educated people, which I claim, you know, I got a couple degrees on the wall. Though, I mean, I think you could question, like, how educated are you? Don't really know what's going on. We're all reading the same stuff. We're all watching the same shows. And I know myself, I feel like I don't even know what's what. I really don't. Like, Tom Hanks tweets out, he's got corona. My first, is he going to die? And then he tweets out, no, I feel good. I'm going to be okay. And then you're like, is he going to be okay? So are we over? You don't even know. It's what makes this really crazy, is there's so much unknown. And I think the NFL, I hope the NFL, for the first time in a while, just makes an easy, correct decision. But I guess by the next time you hear me, the good thing about me, I can self-quarantine in my office and just keep recording podcasts, so the podcasts aren't going to go away. But I guess we'll see by the next time we talk if free agency has happened or not, or I guess is happening or not, which... My guess as of Thursday, March 12th, 4:30 in the afternoon, is that it ultimately gets pushed back unless somehow in some unforeseen circumstances in the next however many hours, Corona just disappears. And it sure as hell feels like Corona ain't disappearing. It's like only getting stronger or at least spreading more. So, you know, I think we've built up for this week in the middle of March to ultimately have it pushed back. Okay, regardless what happens in free agency, whether they move it back or leave it, the reality is for every team, the hay is in the barn. You know exactly what some of your options are. Can I tag and trade this guy? How much is it going to cost me ballpark to sign this guy? Do I have a chance to sign this guy? Because by about early, I was a pro scout, by about early to mid-January, your free agent board is set. You know who you like on your team and what you need. By the time you go to the comp, and you kind of know what's coming out in the draft. So by the time you go to the combine, and I talked about this with Howie, and he said, if you listen to the podcast last week, it's about accumulating information. He's like a CIA agent. And as I told Howie on that interview, another decision maker had told me he had 14 meetings a day for like five straight days. All about getting a feel for how much your own players are going to cost. If I traded this guy, what could I get? If I wanted to trade for this guy, how much it would cost? You've accumulated all that information. So once this week started, like, you have an idea. Now, it doesn't mean you know what's going to happen, but if I'm the Niners, I know how much Eric Armstead wants an extension. I know what I can get tag and trade for the guy. I know teams that go, well, if I sign Clowney, I don't need Armstead. If we don't get Clowney, we'll trade you a second rounder for Armstead. There is a lot of unknown, but you know this or that. You got some idea. With the draft, you're still gathering a boatload of information. Unlike free agency, the hay's in the barn in terms of the information. This period, now we can say how much you gain out of it or not, the pro day circuit, earlier this morning, before I recorded my other podcast, I follow Michigan football. And I see, boom, they've canceled their pro day. I talked to a bunch of scouts. I just text them, like, what's your guy's status? He's like, we got pulled off the road. I'm sure a lot of you guys seen on Twitter that a lot of the scouts and coaches were pulled back to the office. The SEC, of the information that I have that I saw today, canceled everything for at least the next month, including pro days. So pro days, now some of them happened earlier this week, but moving forward, they're not happening. So pro days are donezo. And we could argue all day long how much they matter, but for a guy, I saw the receiver at Clemson, Higgins, who didn't do that much at the combine, did a bunch of stuff at the pro day. Like, you don't have to do stuff at the combine. It's your choice. But usually that same player then does a lot of stuff at the pro days. And again, like, does a vertical jump make or break you? No, but information's power. And there's a reason these guys jump and do these drills. So you can get quantifiable information and compare it to other players in this draft that are in the league. It's hashtag analytics. And this stuff is going to end. And depending on the timeline here, if we don't do pro days, there'll be a lot of questions on the information. And I saw my former boss and my former colleague, Lewis Riddick, tweeted, well, if these pro days end right now, it'll put a lot more pressure on the good organizations that do their work during the fall. And I know the Eagles, the Ravens, the Patriots, that school of grading, their grades lock in at the end of the college football season. They specifically do it so when you go to the Senior Bowl, when you go to the All-Star Games, when you go to the Combine, when you go to the Pro Day, you can't change your grade. When the bowl games end and you have a third-round grade on a player, then he goes to the Senior Bowl, the Combine, and the Pro Days, and he just becomes a workout warrior, you can't bump that up to a late first-round pick. The high-level organizations do not want you to do that. Now, they're going to factor in that information, but they separate it. Now, I don't know how every team does it. You guys got a pretty good idea of the teams I interact with, and I know the way they operate. The Chiefs, the Bears, the Eagles, the Niners. I mean, the Raiders don't talk to me, but I know how they operate because I got a couple moles. But, and again, people think I'm a Raider hater. I'm actually not. I love Mike Mayock. I think he's one of the brighter GMs going. If Mike Mayock got fired tomorrow, he'd actually be in demand. I think when you the draft, there's going to be a lot of unknown. I would imagine general managers, whether you move free agency or don't, they'd be okay with whatever they do. Now, obviously, it's not their choice. To me, the draft, if all these pro day, a lot of GMs are going to be a little insecure and uneasy. Insecure is probably the wrong word. Uneasy. Just because if you're used to a certain amount of information in whatever job you do to help you get to your decision, and then I remove 20% of that information, it gets a little harder. Ultimately, what a decision is, right, is basing stuff off information. Now, you just got to, the way life works, you got to deal with the cards you're dealt, and welcome to the real world. Like, not everything, things change on uncontrollable events, and that's what this is. But with the travel and the groups, are teams still going to have draft meetings? The great part about technology, the podcast I do, Haberman and Middlecoff, we Skype when we record it. So you could easily do, if you're Chris Ballard and your scouts are all over the country, sit in the draft room and Skype in, you know, with your IT guy, figure out how to set up. I'm sure many of you guys listening to do Google Hangouts and all this stuff. I've done it before when I did some freelance stuff for Bleacher Report 7 or 8 years ago. It's not that difficult. You can do it that way. It's what Google and all these companies make all this money from. The technology's there. It's actually not that difficult. It'd be pretty easy, actually, to hold draft meetings remotely. Now, it'd be, you know, you got one guy in California, you got another guy in Connecticut, you got one dude in, you know, Dallas. Now, the time, you know, if you're a California guy and you work for the Eagles and the draft meeting started at 8, you know, you're going to have to get up a little early. Now, you'll be done earlier, but you're just going to have to figure it out. And I would imagine that, you know, football teams and the coach, obviously, can't even speak, always says this, right? Every time you hear a coach speak to a team, or if you've played high school football, you know, you prepare for a game, but you never know what's going to happen. Then you adjust. Halftime adjustments, in-game adjustments, when you're in, when you got to play injured, you got to play when you didn't expect to play, next man up. That's the draft process. That's this. So what pro days get canceled? Figure it out. Like, what's the point of scouting this guy all fall or for the last several years? Because if you're a good player, most guys aren't one-year wonders. Even if you are a one-year wonder, like quote-unquote Joe Burrow, well, every scout in the SEC was keeping an eye on Joe Burrow 2 years ago. Like, you've been keeping an eye on a lot of these guys. If you're a scout that's been in a region for an area, or if you're a college scouting director, you've been accumulating information on all these players. So this tests how good you are at your work. Now, one area that doesn't get talked about that much, and maybe if you listen to some football shows, you've heard of this. There's a thing called top 30, a top 30 visit, the 30 visit. You're allowed to bring in 30 players to your facility. Now, you can't work them out when they're there, but if I'm the Raiders and I want to bring in six or seven of the receivers because I'm going to draft one, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Ruggs, LaVishka, you name it. I'm going to fly them all in. Are we doing that now? Can you do that now? To me, that is an area that at the combine, you only get, I saw this year they added 15. It used to be 60 interviews, 15 minutes a pop. It's now, I think, 48 interviews at 18 minutes a pop. Well, the top 30 visit is a big deal. Because if I'm thinking about drafting, let's say, CeeDee Lamb, but if I'm a general manager slash the coach, and I don't know him that well, I've watched the film and I like it, I've talked to my scouts, boots on the ground, got the information, I still want to meet the guy. You know, it's one thing drafting a guy in the fifth or sixth round and not ever meeting him if you're the coach. It's a little risky, but still, it's just the reality of the business. But financially, you're not tied to him. You can cut him and it doesn't hurt you. You got to know your first and second round picks. Like, it was easy for Kyle Shanahan to draft Deebo Samuel last year. He coached him in the Senior Bowl. Him and his coaches got to spend a lot of time with him. It's another thing to draft a guy at the top of the second round when you never even met him. Now, we hear about it sometimes. I think the Chiefs did it somewhat with Mahomes. But as Veach said, Veach had done so much work on him. He'd scouted him for 2 years really closely. Like, he did do a lot of work. And he was their top scout at the time doing that work. It's another thing to draft, I'm just going to throw this guy's name out, CeeDee Lamb. If I'm whoever, and if I'm John Gruden, I have to meet him. And more than just the 18 minutes of the combine. I just do. Now, I remember John Lynch told a story that they talked to Mike McGlinchey at the combine. They liked him as a player. They interviewed him at the combine, and they loved him. And that was, I think, when they were 15-minute interviews. And then after that, I don't think they brought him in because they didn't want anyone to know how much they liked him. But they knew when he left that, they knew there was a chance they might draft that guy. They like were smitten for him. So there's some of that, but they did meet the guy. And I'd say McGlinchey and CeeDee Lamb might be this too. Certain players are just Tim Tebow off the field. So you don't really need to think much about them. But most players, not even if they're character issues, just, you know, there might be something in his personality that you just want to spend some time around the guy. That might not be positive, might not be negative, just somewhere in the middle. Just the guy's different. We're all different. Have you ever met two humans that are the same? They don't exist. That's where the visits and even the, here's another thing. A lot of teams send position coaches, like if you're going to draft a running back, and Deuce Staley's my running back coach. Well, and I know, like, if I'm the Eagles, for example, and I drafted Miles Sanders last year in the second round. Was it the third round? I think it was the second round. And I go, well, I need another running back to go with him. So I'm not gonna draft a guy super high, but I would draft a guy somewhere between the fourth and the sixth round. We'll get a list of, like, the majority of guys, maybe 10 guys that we like, that will be in that range. And I'm going to send Deuce on a 15-day, couple-week, just fly around the country and go work those players out. Write reports, come back, rank them. And we'll kind of attack it from there. Like, is that going to go on now? I mean, sure as hell doesn't look like it. So there are going to be elements to the draft process, which this is all a process, that aren't going to exist. And it's just going to be strictly on the film. Which, for the most part, and I have always believed this, majority of misses are not with the player. They're with the person. And the more time a position coach I trust, and that's why I use Deuce, like if Deuce likes the guy, I think the guy's going to be good. Just that simple. And he's got a feel, and every staff has these couple position coaches that can just go, yep, that's our type guy. Or nope, that's not our type guy. And you trust them. And you just send that guy, and it helps the draft process so much. Just gets to spend some time with five or six players that you have grouped in the same little clump. That if they were all there in the fifth round, as of middle of March, you don't know how you'd rank them. The more information you get, you know, I don't love that personality. I don't like that person. I like that guy. Jim Washburn, who was the D-line coach when I was with the Eagles. He's like, Fletcher Cox is the dude. He thought he was the guy. and he was dead on. You knew it. Fletcher Cox probably go to the Hall of Fame one day. And that's you're good, really talented position coaches that are good evaluators and just good judges of people, like great evaluator of football character and kind of work ethic character, just the character that surrounds what it takes to be an NFL player. You do depend on two or three guys on every staff during this time of year, and it doesn't feel like some of this stuff might not get pushed back. It might get just, you know, deleted. It might not happen. It might just vanish this year, which, again, back to what I originally said, that's life. Shit happens. It's just going to kind of change. I wonder if, you know, in a couple, 3 or 4 years, it'll be like, we didn't have enough time because of Corona. I would imagine, I don't know if people will outwardly make that excuse because you'll kind of look bad, but it wouldn't shock me if there's some articles, like some GMs don't love this process, they're getting things taken away from them, because it's a league that, the reason that these scouts weren't yanked off the road right away is because the competitive, you're so terrified, well, if another team's not doing it, I can't do it. It's just, I have to keep up with the Joneses. Because if I don't do that, we'll take a step back. Because the difference in the NFL between the haves and the have-nots is like two players and a good coach. You know, in the NBA, it's like if you don't have LeBron or James Harden or Steph, you got no chance to win. In baseball, if you don't either have Billy Beane or a big payroll, you're going to lose. In football, it's just the difference between like the Redskins and the Cowboys next year could just be like if Ron Rivera gets the right quarterback, right? Who's to say the Redskins couldn't be solid next year? Things change fast in the league. It's the one sport where every year new teams make the playoffs. Every year first teams go to last place. Just the constant, I don't know if parity is the right word, because over a 10, 20-year period, similar teams make the playoffs a lot. But on any given year, like in the sport, you know, the sport is based off the premise any given Sunday, things change, you know. So this draft is big for a team like Sean McDermott, talking to him at the combine. Like, he's a team that probably feels he's a player or two away from being in the AFC championship game. I mean, this draft to him is massive. So you take some of these things away from him, I bet, just like in society, there's just a lot of uncertainty surrounding the draft prospects right now. Okay, kind of feels weird, but, you know, let's do a Middlecoff mailbag. Got a bunch of questions. We'll fire through them. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram handle. You just send me a DM and we talk on the show. Well, actually, I might need a lot of these over if free agency gets pushed back and the draft gets pushed back. It's going to be some open real estate to do some, to do who knows what. I don't even know. Do you think Major League Baseball would benefit if players could hit free agency after 4 years, if service time of 7 years, so players can sign bigger contracts in their 20s instead of their 30s? Also, do you think the NFL could benefit from a minor league system like MLB does, so players can get reps? I think baseball is definitely a screwed up system. Too many guys, because you got to wait 6 years till you hit free agency, but that's 6 years till you get to the big leagues. So if I'm a college player, and this is the benefit, this is why Kyler Murray played football, because Kyler Murray, before he got to, let's say he made the big leagues, which he was a first-round pick, he would have, he might have been in the minors for 3 years. So he's 21 years old. He gets to the minors till 24 years old, gets up. Let's say he becomes a good player. He doesn't become a free agent until 30. Well, think about Kyler Murray in football. He's the number one overall pick, signs a $35 million contract, starts immediately. Is a quarterback, so he's really famous. Is 4 years away if he's really good. Well, hell, he's already a year in. He's 3 years away from an extension. So it sucks being a good baseball player because you got to wait forever. That's why I think a lot of people think that there's going to be a strike in baseball. I'm still traveling for work and doing the same things I always try to do, avoid getting sick from the cold and flu, but watching events of today and today's weird thought. Of all the leagues, NFL and Major League Baseball, best positions against Corona. Fans typically outside, and especially football, if it's cold, fans are bundled up and have masks over their face to keep warm. Serious question. How do leagues plan for something like this? And while Combine had passed, if travel gets shut down in the U.S. like other countries, what impacts is there to the draft, if any, since scouts won't be able to get on airplanes? Related question, what about college recruiting? I saw the SEC shut down college recruiting. Like I talked about the pro days and the draft. I mean, it's gonna cripple it. Your first question, how do they plan for something like this? I think this is part of life. I mean, there are things in tragedies. I don't know if we'd call this a tragedy yet. It's a pandemic. You know, tragedies when you, like Kobe Bryant's situation is a tragedy. You know, when your parents pass, I mean, I lost my dad a couple years ago. He was sick, and he had been sick for a little while. And while we didn't know the severity of his sickness, it turned out he had pancreatic cancer. My gut, and he acted a lot different the last year. Well, you know, it turns out his old stubborn ass was so sick he just kept his mouth shut, but he was a different human being. It just started getting weird. You know, but think how many people you know that have tragedies in their life. Whether it's I'm going to get extreme here, but their son becomes a paraplegic, or they lose a family member, a teenager. I mean, these are the worst case things. Or, you know, a guy gets in a drunk driving accident. I don't even know. I mean, these things happen every day. Not to always, I mean, for the most part, you don't even know them. You see them out on the news. I mean, tragedy strikes all the time. And you just got to find a way to keep going, good or bad. I mean, we have good things happen to us too. But I think there are just things in this crazy world that we're a part of, being human beings, that you just don't know what's coming, you know? And this is something that if you would have said Corona 2 months ago, you would have said light, you want a lime, you know, draft, is it on tap? Now, Corona, I don't think we're ever going to say the word Corona again the same. Can you give a take on how it's cool to hate on billionaires and kind of snowflakey when a billionaire says they're going to do a charitable donation? Then there is always the one guy who is like, in relative terms, it's like you give or I give $15, then contrast it with Cuban being a good guy. I think you'd make a great take out of my poorly constructed paragraph. Yeah, I'm very uncomfortable with the way the media treats owners in general. Now, are there, you know, quote-unquote shitheads and D-bags and bad dudes? For sure. But are most guys pretty good guys? You know, Joe Lacob, like, you know, he's a brash talker, but does he do a lot for the community? And does he reinvest a lot in the community? Or Mark Cuban or Jed York? Or I'm just using the guys in my backyard, the Giants, in their ownership? Yes. You know, is Dan Snyder a bad owner? 1,000,000%. You Redskin fans might know. I don't know much information. I imagine the Redskins do give a lot back. Like, I think we all act like these owners are just scumbags. And I talked about this at length on my other pod about the Corona. I get uncomfortable when we talk about greed. When you run a big, big business, you have enormous expenses. Like Joe Lacob right now. He's a rich guy, but he overextended himself and got really aggressive to build this building in San Francisco. His expenses per game, while he makes $5 to $6 million a game there, he depends on a lot of revenue to pay that. And think about his bill. Well, think about several of his employees. Klay Thompson makes $35 million. Steph makes $40 million. Draymond now makes $25 million. On top of the other players, his coaches, his insurance that he pays on the building, his the payments that he's paying for his workers, which again, I mean, it's a business. When we say greed, like part of it is just to keep the wheel churning of money in, money out, money in, money out. Really, you know who's making the most cash and the most liquid? Are players, especially in the NBA. The NFL, not as much. I mean, a few players. I would imagine several players in the NBA, LeBron, Steph, Harden, some of the younger guys are probably not there yet, Chris Paul, are more liquid. I'm talking, you look in their bank account, they might have $200 million. Now, Mark Cuban might have $200 million, and Jerry Jones might. Mark Davis doesn't. Mike Brown doesn't. Vivek Ranadive doesn't. We just like pointing, and the media does. And I've said this all the time. I took journalist journalism classes at Cal Poly. I also took a lot of business classes. I think it would behoove a lot of people. J.A. Adonde tweeted last night that all the tickets of all the canceled games should not be refunded. They should all go to the part-time workers. Because everyone that is getting, that everyone that bought tickets, that is disposable income. Listen, I got no issue with J.A. I've always kind of liked him. But that is a laughable opinion. Because my take would be, beside rent and food and like basic stuff for your kids to clothe them, everything's disposable income. And to act like everyone going to an NBA game is super wealthy would be one of the most moronic thoughts ever. It's just false. I mean, I bought tickets to go to an NBA game the other night. I'm by no means rich. The $220 I paid for the two tickets were, not that I need the money, but I don't just give that money away. It doesn't mean nothing to me. And I think sometimes you see some of these takes with people in the media, it's like, guys, can you guys read a business book for the love of God? And you don't need to be pro. Like, listen, I'm not trying to beat the drums like, while they cancel these games, the owner should profit at the same level. Of course not. But they're going to lose their ass. And they're depending on paying a lot of people. That when you run a business, people think like liquid. A lot of the money is tied up. That's the way business works. I know a lot of you guys that are listening to this, because I've gotten a lot of listeners from the Colin crowd. You guys are an educated crowd. You guys understand how this works. To me, there's a big difference between being quote-unquote greedy, which the NFL owners, when it comes to 17 and 18 games, you could argue that's greedy. Now, are they greedy in everything they do by giving the players, you know, some more money and the way they treat players and the way they pay their coaches? No league pays the coaches like they do in the NFL. I'm not talking just the head coaches that make more in the NFL than the other two sports. I'm talking the assistant coaches, the millionaires that are being created to be coordinators. That doesn't get taught. That's not sexy. We saw the NFL was public enemy number one for many years with the media. Because I think we all acknowledge it stands for, you know, capitalism and just you know, aggressive business more than the NBA, who loves to, you know, kind of be a little more progressive. Yet we saw, are they any different than the NFL? We saw when China came up with Daryl Morey, what happened? The NBA got China's back because they love their revenue source. You know who likes revenue sources? All of us. We all do, because everything costs money. If my money just gets cut off, like I owe like over $300,000 on this condo. I got to pay it off. I got a mortgage to pay off. You guys, house payments, payments for your kids. Like, we all need this revenue to keep coming in. We all start living. And money's all relative. Whether $15 to me is, you know, $5 million to Joe Lacob or Jed York, it's still the same. Like, that still means something. Now, you can still, the difference is, if we all get cut off tomorrow, myself, I'm only surviving for a finite period of time. I don't have an unlimited amount of money in my savings account. That money would run out relatively fast. I actually took a little and put it in my stock account, because there's a couple stocks, if they get to a couple low numbers, I'm diving back in. But that's a risky move. I actually put a five-figure amount in my stock account, and I started thinking, like, is that a smart move? And then I started thinking, you know, sometimes in life, you got to have some balls and risk some stuff. But that's a risk I'm willing to take. Could it backfire? 100%. I just think we just love shitting on owners all the time. It just never ends. It gets exhausting to me sometimes. I'm not saying they're all, I'm not calling them, you know, Mother Teresa here. But I say it all the time. If I go to a Niner game next year and Joe Schmo jumps off the top of the building, lands head first, and kills himself, does Jimmy Garoppolo or Tom Brady, we'll see how free agency plays out, or Nick Bosa or Joe Staley or any of those guys have to worry about what just happened to that human? No. They shower and they go home. That's all on the owner. The players, especially in the NBA and baseball, Steph Curry now really doesn't even have a liability. He could break his ankle or tear his ACL tomorrow, and it wouldn't matter at all. That entire contract is coming his way. Kevin Durant tore his Achilles. Every team in the league was lined up to give him a max contract. and he got one. Hell, the Warriors were offering him more money. I give Kevin Love some credit because I said the NBA is by far, they hang their hat, we're the most outspoken league, and that's fine. I got no problem with being a big talker. Just back it up with your actions. And there are probably 30-plus players in the NBA worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Like the NFL, a rich player might have $20 million in the bank. In the NBA, to be, I'd consider you rich, you'd have $100-plus million in the bank. Kevin Love has made $200-plus million in his career. And I gave him, he offered $100,000 to help out these workers that are going to be impacted. I think every NBA team has a player on their team probably worth over $100 million. Some players have multiple. Like those guys, it's always, the owners need to pick up the tab. Why don't the players pitch in a little too? It's an easy one for them. I give Kevin Love a lot of credit. And there would be that the same people that shit on the owners will be like, oh, $100,000 means nothing to them. Well, I mean, what are we doing when we're playing that game? That game bothers me. It really does. Anyways, here's a question. With the CBA more than likely passing and the NFL moving on from THC testing, what does that mean for a dude like Josh Gordon? Is he absolved? Is he sitting around somewhere praying to God this actually passes? Honestly, I hope that is the fact in the case. That's a great question. I can't honestly answer. I don't know. If I had to guess, like in society, right, they've gone back and they've retroactively taken, I don't know what the exact word is, I'm missing, there's a specific word, and they've absolved people's charges, right? If you were serving 5 years for selling $100 worth of weed because that was your second strike, they've let those people out in prison, right? There's a big difference we've realized between selling a dime bag and selling a crack rock. And it felt like when I was growing up, my dad, if you said weed or crack in like 91, he would have thought they were the same thing. The marketing against weed was, you got to tip your hat to the alcohol industry, the cigarette industry. You might as well, and the baby boomers, at least the baby boomers that I was around, I mean, thought weed was meth. You know what turns out? You know, actually, weed might be better for you than alcohol. You know what I'm learning? You know the worst thing that I use? Sugar. I mean, sugar. And I don't know. I would let those guys play. But with Roger and the NFL, you never know. Hi, John. Really big fan. Just a question. As a British guy who has played American football for the last 7 years, I was wondering what you thought of the prospect of NFL Europe returning or even European XFL in the future, as basketball has produced many great European athletes from having those Euro leagues? It's a good question. You know, I would say they would just keep messing with the XFL. I think the Europe League is a little complicated logistically. Now, maybe they could add an XFL team to London. Maybe that would be on the table. I could see that. Maybe if this XFL thing, you know, keeps going the way it is, you put an XFL team in London, and it's kind of a precursor to the Jags moving over there. I'm a diehard Eagles fan living in California. What is your opinion on the Eagles should do in regards to the draft and free agency? We have a solid tight end group, but need a lot of help at running back and receiver. I would love to see the Eagles go after Sammy Watkins and another wide receiver to be a top threat with DeSean Jackson. Your thoughts? Well, you know, DeSean's now in his early 30s. And he couldn't make it through more than one game last year. So I think, and I know that one game he had like 150 yards, 2 touchdowns. You almost have to look at anything you get from DeSean next year as gravy. Alshon, because of his contract, is probably stuck. You got Ertz and Goddard. You got Miles Sanders, who looks pretty good. You'd probably like to get a physical back in the mid rounds in the draft to go with him. I think a Sammy Watkins, you know, maybe a veteran guy like an Emmanuel Sanders. You'll see if other players are cut, you get involved in. Deion Lewis was just released from the Titans. Now, he's a little like Miles Sanders, but, you know, the West Coast offense, kind of what Doug and Andy Reid, they like those little scat backs, so maybe you sign a guy like that. I think you think about drafting a guy in the first couple rounds, and then I think you sign a wide receiver. But to me, they're number one. They need a corner. They do not have functional corners. So if you sign Byron Jones and maybe you draft a wide receiver in a corner in some rotation in the first and second round, that would probably be what I would do. But you would think if you can keep the tight ends healthy, you got two dynamic tight ends. We got one great tight end, and then you have Goddard, who should be a good player. You got Miles Sanders, who should be really good. And then you need, you know, Greg Ward Jr. is a pretty good player. I talked to Doug at the combine. I was like, God, Doug, that guy can play. So how did you become a scout for the Eagles? What were the steps for you getting there? I just sent Andy Reid a letter, and he emailed me back and said, come. No, I worked in college football. I've told the story. I got involved when I was an undergrad at Cal Poly. I became a graduate assistant in recruiting at Fresno State. And then we had a lot of NFL players. You know, Ryan Matthews, my second year, was, I think, 15th overall pick, maybe 13th, replaced LaDainian Tomlinson. So basically every scout in the country was coming through. And in recruiting, you work with the scouts. I worked with the pro liaison, meaning the guy that gives all the information for your college players to the scouts. And I just got to know them, and one thing led to another, and I got an opportunity. But I tell people all the time when they think about wanting to work in scouting, work in college and try to work with a bigger program, like a mid-major or a major. That's where the NFL players come from, and the scouts will come through. As a Cowboy fan, am I crazy to want to move on from Dak at over $30 million a year and possibly sign Jameis and let Amari walk and draft a receiver and keep Byron Jones? Jameis has potential, just needs the less picks, healthy, with eye surgery, who knows? I think there's a lot of faith in Jameis's LASIK. I don't remember a LASIK that people thought was going to have that big of a changing moment for a human. Now, we'll see. Steph Curry got LASIK, but he could shoot before it. You know, so I don't know. I'd have to study Byron Jones to have a legitimate take. I mean, clearly he's a solid player. Is he highest paid corner in NFL history worthy? That makes me a little nervous. You did trade a first round pick for Amari, but as we've talked about on here, Amari can be a little hit or miss. I'm with you. I don't love paying Dak historic money, but he is pretty good. The problem is, if Dak doesn't get any better from here on out, you're just stuck with Dak paying him this historic freight. That's pretty risky. Like, you're right. I mean, if Jameis cuts down some picks, you get him with McCarthy, you get him with some of your, you know, you keep Amari, you got, what's his name from Colorado State, Michael Gallup. You got Zeke. You know, I think you draft, like, you could draft a receiver to go along with those two guys too. It's an offensive league. Your defense is already solid. Maybe you look at it like that. I just, you're kind of stuck. You know, this is why the Cowboys, I don't know why they wait so long to always pay players. You got to pay them earlier so you get them at discounted prices. The Cowboys wait, and then Jerry loves them, and then he pays them a premium, and then he gets into cap trouble. I mean, it's kind of on Jerry. He just hates signing early because I don't know. It's just, I love Jerry the businessman, but God, sometimes with his contracts, he's just pretty hit or miss. Sorry for, you know, this is a different podcast, Corona podcast. Appreciate you guys going with me and living with me and coming through this bumpy ride. And, you know, I'll see you next week and hope everyone stays safe. Stay quarantined. Wash your hands. Stay safe and see you soon. Talk to you soon. Adios.